I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri in for Jane Lindholm. I'm going to take you back to a time when butter would top a fluffy biscuit or it would be thrown on top of a dish full of cooked fresh vegetables. And you'd fry something up in lard in a cast iron skillet. Before we were told that vegetable oil, high in polyunsaturated fats, was better for us. And we saw butter replaced with the oddly textured, bizarrely colored margarine. Well, if you're willing to sit through a little bit of chemistry today to understand the differences between vegetable oil and animal fats, then you might find that it's tallow time again. You'll hear how suet can be swell and lard can be lovely. Here to discuss all of this is Andrea Chessman of Ripton. She's the author of more than 20 cookbooks, including her latest, The Fat Kitchen, How to Render, Cure, and Cook with Lard, Tallow, and Poultry Fat. Andrea, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
All right, Andrea, help me disconnect the concept that eating things made with fat will make me fat.
Eating a lot of foods will make you fat, but a moderate diet that includes fat will not necessarily make you fat. I'm not a nutritionist, but I understand that we evolved as human beings eating animal fats until very, very recently. In the early 1900s, corn oil was developed, and it was the first vegetable oil fat besides olive oil. And so vegetable oils came into our diet because they were cheap, not because they were necessarily good for us. And the transformation from eating a lot of animal fats in our cooking and baking to polyunsaturated vegetable seed oils was very, very recent in our diet and has had a lot of consequences. And the rise in heart disease and other inflammatory diseases also parallels the increased eating of polyunsaturated fats.
Michael Ruhlman is a renowned writer on food and cooking, and he writes in the foreword of your book, he calls fat America's bugaboo. So are you saying we shouldn't fear fat, we should embrace it?
I'm saying that everything in moderation is fine and that animal fats are not bad for you. They're better for the environment. They're better for our farmers. And they produce superior results when we're cooking and baking. I think that I have eliminated vegetable seed oils from my kitchen with the exception of olive oil. And I think friends don't let friends cook with polyunsaturated fats anymore.
That sounds like a bumper sticker. All right. You do make distinctions between fats, between animal fats and vegetable seed oils and olive oil, and among the animal fats. So let's kind of break some of that down right now.
Well, I think the most important thing to understand is that when we say animal fats are saturated fat and that's bad for you, we forget that animal fats are not exclusively saturated fat. Lard is roughly half saturated fat and half monounsaturated fat. And goose fat is very high in monounsaturated fat. It's about 30% saturated fat and about, I don't remember numbers well, but it's about 70% monounsaturated fat, which brings it really close to olive oil in its proportions.
So if I'm looking for the healthier fats. Am I looking for saturated, monounsaturated, polyunsaturated? Is there a better area?
There is a lot of agreement that monounsaturated fats do not raise cholesterol. But cholesterol is really a complicated subject, and we have a limited ability to test the cholesterol buildup in the body. And the picture is a lot more complex than we've been led to believe. And I think that's the takeaway with all the dietary advice. It's much more complex than we thought.
Now, you also, I think you kind of draw distinctions between some good animal fats and bad animal fats, the way they're raised.
Well, when I talk about animal fats, I am exclusively talking about pasture-raised animal fats. And the commercial pigs that are raised in confined feeding operations, they're given all sorts of things like bakery wastes, which include the paper that the bakery items were wrapped in. And you can imagine that that isn't very healthy for the animal or the fat that it accumulates. But the pasture-raised animals produce a lot of the omega-3 fatty acids that we're told to consume and is why people are eating so much salmon these days. Mm. So you can get it naturally from the fats in the pig that the farmer down the road raised.
Let's also talk about olive oil. So where does this fit into the picture between animal fats, these vegetable seed oils, and olive oil?
Olive oil is a great food. We've been eating it for millennia. It's low in saturated fats, high in monounsaturated fats. It's low in polyunsaturated fats. And it has a relatively low smoke point. So it's great for making salad dressings, but it's completely unsuited, if it's extra virgin olive oil, for frying. And you don't want to hit the smoke point when you're cooking because that causes the fat to break down and release toxic compounds.
All right. So how did it happen that as I was growing up, lard, tallow, schmaltz all fell out of favor? Vegetable oils, I would see ads on and they would talk about high in polyunsaturated fats. And I thought that was the gold standard. Like that's what I had to have. And lard became verboten. It was like not to be used.
There were some extremely influential scientists who pushed the idea that consuming animal fats caused heart disease. And they had an impact on public policy. But there has never been a proven link between heart disease and consuming animal fats. And as recently as or as far back as 1960, the science was coming in that it wasn't animal fats, it was sugar that was the problem. And that information has been widely suppressed.
Well, so tell me, when I fry something in an animal fat or in lard, or I fry something in a, either deep fry or fry on a skillet with vegetable oils, what happens to the food?
If the oil is hot enough, you get a reasonably good product, but there will be some oil on the food as you take it out of the pan, and that oil will slowly be absorbed by the food. But if you fry in an animal fat, when you lift it out of the animal fat, the food will, that animal fat will solidify and form a crisp coating, and it won't soak into the inside of the food, and you end up with something that's very crisp. And I've brought for you some kale that I roasted in goose fat. And I took the kale and instead of tossing it with olive oil, like most of the recipes on the internet are, mm-hmm. I tossed it with melted goose fat. And I was able to do this a couple of hours ago and it's still crisp. I don't know if you want to make the noise on the microphone, it's going to be tasty.
So you know I'm going to try it because I just can't not eat food.
You hear that crunch? That crunch is going to last all day long.
Mm. And I got to tell you something. I have had kale chips before and have not liked them. I just am not a fan. Now, this I would eat all the time.
It's a snack-worthy food.
It is a snack-worthy food. We've talked about this, Andrea, but I have to say I am still skeptical because we are not wired to accept animal fats, especially, growing up in the last several generations of what, we have been told. So have nutritionists, you said you're not a nutritionist, have nutritionists responded to your book?
There have been, well, the book's publication date is today. And so, no, there hasn't been a huge response today from right. nutritionists. And I think it will be a while before people are more willing to adapt animal fats. And I'm not there are people who are doing very high-fat ketone diets, and that is this book isn't about that. This book is simply about the foods that we normally eat. Everybody's going to make potato pancakes or all the Jews are going to make potato latkes for Hanukkah mm-hmm. this week or next. It's in 2 weeks, I think. All I'm suggesting is use goose fat, which was traditional, or duck fat or chicken fat, and you'll have a better latke, and it will be more traditional.
Go ahead.
And if you're making pies for Thanksgiving, if you use lard instead of butter, you will get a superior flaky pie crust because the lard doesn't melt as quickly as butter does. So the proteins in the pie crust can set up before the fats melt and create air pockets. Another difference between lard and butter when you're baking is that butter is 15% water. So all of that water has to evaporate before it can stop making things soggy.
Now, last night I had to call my mother to tell her that I was having this conversation with you today because she is and her mother from a time when they loved using butter, not margarine. They loved using lard instead of the vegetable fats, right? And she said, write to me, before I could even tell her about this book, she said, I've always said that the best pie crust is made with lard. And she couldn't explain why. So let's go back to what makes a flaky pie crust. You kind of explained it there. When we use butter and how lard just makes that much different.
Well, first of all, if you really want flakes, you don't use your food processor because it breaks the fat particles up too small. And then you just rub the flour and lard together with your fingertips and make the dough that way, chill it a little bit. And then lard doughs just roll out so easily that even if you're the sort of person who says, I can't do it, I can assure you that the lard crust will be easy for you to make. Another difference between lard and butter when you're baking is that it doesn't brown quite as quickly because there aren't the milk sugars. So some of your cookies, like the cookies I brought today, that are chocolate chips, they will be lighter in color than if you made them with butter. But you won't taste the lard, and it's a nice crisp cookie.
All right. So there's another place that I'm just skeptical is I'm using animal fat in baked goods, in sweet baked goods, right? And why would I do that? Why won't I taste the animal fats? And why wouldn't this cookie taste like beef and not what I'm used to?
Because they're flavorless if they're rendered properly. So the fats need to be melted slowly. They need to be cut into tiny pieces, mm-hmm. melted slowly, and you start removing the fat from the cracklings that remain before they brown because it's those remainders of collagen and little bits of flesh that will flavor the fat. So my fat properly rendered is completely tasteless.
And how long does it take to render fat?
It depends on how tiny your pieces are, but it takes about an hour. And also it depends on the quantity you're using. But I'd also like to say, just as an entry to working with animal fats, that every time you roast a chicken, you have rendered fat. Every time you make a stew or a soup, you have fat that collects on the top. You can skim that off. You can't bake with it because it's chemically a little bit different, but you can certainly sauté with it. So you take that fat that you skimmed off your chicken broth or your bone broth and sauté your green beans in it and enjoy how it enhances the flavor.
I'm talking with Vermont cookbook author Andrea Chessman, whose latest is The Fat Kitchen, How to Render, Cure, and Cook with Lard, Tallow, and Poultry Fat. And today we're getting the skinny on fat. As a matter of fact, I just had a chocolate chip cookie. Andrea, tell me what this cookie was that I had. It was delicious.
I made it with a recipe for Toll House cookies that are on the back of the package of the chocolate morsels. And the switch I made was lard instead of butter. But I did add an extra half teaspoon of salt because the flavor of lard and tallow in particular tends to be a little flat. So in some of my recipes, which are adapted from other butter-based recipes, I just upped the sugar or the salt just a bit to compensate for that flatness.
Oh, how fantastic. Listeners, you can join the discussion by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211, or you can post your thoughts or questions on the VPR Facebook page. Okay, so give us some positive reasons, the real positives of why we'd use animal fat in our cooking.
The reason to use animal fats in our cooking, particularly in Vermont, is that we want to support the farmers who are raising the animals that we're eating, and there's no reason to throw the fat out instead of eat with it. And in our own kitchens, as I mentioned, you can skim off the fat from a soup or stew and use that fat. It's more economical. But I got into it because I wrote a book on called The Backyard Homestead Book of Kitchen Know-How, and it was everything you need to know about handling the fresh foods that you raise from your garden and from your farm. And it included rendering animal fats. So then I was faced with, what am I going to do with the animal fats? And I started cooking and baking with it, and I was amazed at the wonderful results that I was getting. If you buy a quarter of a half of a steer from someone, you will end up with 13 pounds of tallow, which you can ask the farmer to give you, or if not, it gets thrown out or put into animal fats or pet food. So why not use it yourself? You paid for it.
Yeah, but Andrea, I'm not going to buy half a steer, all right?
Okay.
It's just me. So, you know, are there, I don't know, I probably don't have the time or the inclination necessarily to render my fat, but I'd love to cook some of these recipes with animal fat. So is there an alternative? Can I buy it at the store? What's the way I can get tallow or schmaltz or lard?
You can buy duck fat at almost every large grocery store, a supermarket in Vermont. I have found it in the freezer section from most stores. You can buy it online, and you can go to a farmer and at a farmer's market and make a connection for lard or beef tallow.
Oh, yeah.
And you can buy it in smaller quantities.
All right.
I can pre-order everything I need from the Middlebury Food Co-op, except goose fat. Goose is rare in the United States. You can get it now during the holiday season, but there are very few geese farmers in Vermont, and there's not enough duck farmers either. And I make sure to buy a couple of ducks every year from Rolling Bales Farm in Shoreham.
All right, cross your fingers, Andrea. We're going back to the phones. We're going to talk to Jill from Andover. Jill, thanks for calling Vermont Edition. You there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
And hi, Jill.
Okay. Hi. This is really slightly off your topic, but when I was brought up, all our meat was heavily marbled. There was layers of fat on the top, and it produced the most wonderful drippings. And we had a dripping pot in the kitchen which contained beef drippings, bacon drippings, chicken, everything. And the biggest treat we ever had was to have it on hot toast or on bread. I can still taste it.
Now, where did you grow up, Jill?
I grew up in England during the war, so we saved everything.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Drippings.
And drippings from a roast on toast is delicious. It really is. And in old delis in New York City, you could get, there would be a little container of schmaltz, chicken fat, on the table, which you were meant to put on your bread.
Let's take a call from Ruth. She's calling from East Dorset, has a great question. Ruth, go right ahead.
Hi. I've been a long time, a lard user with my pie crust from my childhood, and certainly switched to the fat, the Crisco-based in my later years because of pressure. But my question is, now that I'm able to find lard in the stores, which wasn't possible for a long time, why is it not refrigerated?
That is an excellent question. The lard that is not refrigerated in the supermarkets should be avoided at all costs.
Now tell us
it
why.
It is heavily processed. I don't know. I know that it was for a while hydrogenated like Crisco, so it created trans fats. Trans fats have been illegal since January this year. So what is the industry doing to replace the trans fats? The industry has created a process called interesterification, which creates a molecule that has never been tested or seen by human beings before. So it is the brand new thing that we will find out in 60 years is causing heart disease or some dreadful thing. I would avoid the repackaged Crisco, and I would avoid anything, any shelf-stable fats.
Well, let's talk about making sure that the lard, the fats, don't become rancid. So it used to be you just had kind of a tin jar, I think, and you just collected the fats in there. And they it did just sit. I remember in our kitchen, kind of sat by the stovetop. But how should we be handling these?
You should be handling it by putting it in the refrigerator or freezer. It will definitely extend the life. And, you know, the old, we kept our drippings in a tin can by the stove. Yes, and you didn't have central heating either. But our houses are much warmer than it used to be. And heat and light causes rancidification. And rancid foods increase inflammation in the body. They're not good for you.
Yeah, we'll try to avoid that. Now, I understand that you have somewhat of a Robert Frost connection.
I do. We live in an old farmhouse in Ripton, Vermont, and Robert Frost used to rent the cabin across the street, and he took his meals, in our dining room. We have a picture in the dining room of Robert Frost having tea with Agnes and Eunice Billings, who lived in our house, and also in the picture is Homer Noble, and he bought a farm from Mr. Noble later and moved up the road.
And now when you test your recipes.
So everything that we test, we eat in the Robert Frost Memorial Dining Room. And you have to understand, Ripton has a Robert Frost Memorial Park, Robert Frost Memorial Roadside, Robert Frost Parking Lot, Robert Frost Bridge, and now a dining room.
So Ripton is Robert Frost world.
We think so.
All right. Now, John, I think you touched on this, but he probably didn't hear it, so it's good that we readdress this. John says, where can you buy duck fat or goose fat?
Goose fat, you have to buy a goose during the Christmas season. That's the only time you'll see it. Or you can buy it online for a huge amount of money. But you can buy the duck fat in most of the large supermarkets.
Now we're going to talk recipes. I promise that. And I'm going to start by asking you about one that I read, and I'm so excited. And you actually brought some along. I've been holding back till this very moment to try duck fat popcorn. Tell us about this.
Making anything with poultry fats enhances the flavor. It whereas lard and beef tallow tend to be neutral, duck fat popcorn is popcorn that's enhanced in flavor that you wouldn't dilute with butter. It's just that good. So my husband said that this popcorn was what popcorn would taste like if they pass it out in heaven.
Yes. So as you were speaking, I thought I would just eat one. I had six pieces.
It's irresistible.
It is irresistible. And I make popcorn on a stovetop. I'm very proud of my popcorn. And I have yet to make a batch that is as delicious as what I've just tasted.
Poultry fats enhance flavor no matter what you cook with them. It just adds something extra. And if you want roasted vegetables and you roast them in any poultry fat, it is such an enhanced experience. Potatoes roasted with duck fat are heavenly.
Wow, that was so good. Let me try another one. You didn't bring this, but I really want to know about this because I've had pasta with white clam sauce. I've had it with red clam sauce. But you have a recipe for pasta with green clam sauce. Please, please, please tell me what that is.
The pasta, I believe, has salt pork in it because I also do cover how to cure fats, just simple curing. And basically you take the back fat, which is solid fat without a lot of collagen or anything in it, and you salt it for 7 days in your refrigerator, cover it with kosher salt, ignore it for 7 days, and it comes out as salt pork. It has great flavor, and you can use it as you would use bacon or bacon fat. It adds flavor, and I use it as a cooking medium, and it gets crispy little bits when you fry it up. So the clam sauce has broth, and it has wine and spinach, and it just makes it just feel a little bit more healthy to eat.
Oh, my gosh. It sounds phenomenal. Is there any favorite that you have in the book, a recipe?
The chicken and biscuits. I make it often, and it's a great way to use up your turkey leftovers. Just substitute the turkey. And so it's basically cream turkey with vegetables served with biscuits that are made with chicken fat or turkey fat. Mm. But you won't have a lot of turkey fat left over if you make gravy.
Oh, good point. All right. We did get this note from Helen in Waitsfield, and she writes, I cook a goose for Christmas. As I prepare it for roasting, there is always a substantial piece of fat. I remove this and freeze it for later use. My question is, should I continue to use this method or should I render before freezing?
It doesn't matter. I have rendered before without freezing, and I have frozen it. You just cut it up into little bits and melt it slowly and then strain it. And that will be your very pure goose fat. And it will be almost white and it will be harder than chicken fat. Chicken fat is the softest. Duck fat is a little more solid. Goose fat is pretty solid. And after you roast that goose, pour off the juices. And if you put it in a bowl and leave it overnight, you can actually and then turn it upside down, you can actually pull off the solid gelled
right
goose juices, and what you have below is pure goose fat.
Oh wow. That sounds phenomenal.
And I do that when I make duck confit or goose confit, because there's a lot of juices and you want to separate it from the fat.
Grace writes this. She says, first of all, congratulations to Andrea for yet another fabulous cookbook. Love cooking with schmaltz, which I religiously render from the skins of the meat birds I raise every year. My secret ingredient in matzo balls.
Yes. My grandparents all came over from the Ukraine, Russia, Poland, beyond the pale, as it's called. And it was traditional to raise a goose. Every Jewish family raised geese, or someone in the village raised geese. And the geese were slaughtered before Thanksgiving. It was or not Thanksgiving, before Hanukkah. It was traditional to have roast goose for Hanukkah in the old country, and you use the goose fat to make the potato latkes, and you hoped to have enough goose fat left from Hanukkah to Passover for the Seders, and to use the remaining goose fat in your matzo balls.
Now, Andrea, you've written a ton of cookbooks. I think you've also tested recipes for other cookbooks. So how do you go about that? How do you, like, develop a recipe or take someone else's recipe and test it and say, sorry, this recipe would be better if you did this or that?
Well, actually, I edit other people's cookbooks, and I do not test their recipes.
Ah, no kidding.
The author is solely responsible for the testing, and that's why sometimes the recipes aren't that good in a cookbook you might buy. And I think the tendency is for cookbook writers is to say, oh, I'm sure it would have been better if I just added a few more tablespoons of sugar, and they don't retest. I do retest. But you start with an idea. The Fat Kitchen book does not have a lot of unique original recipes. I was looking for recipes that came out of traditions where people traditionally used animal fats. And then I went from there and put my own twist on it.
We got this note from John. He says, we raise organic pigs and use all the lard. Don't forget to distinguish between the leaf lard and the back fat. And don't forget the fantastic crispy leftovers after rendering the leaf lard.
Yes.
So tell us about the difference between those two.
The back fat is solid, and it's good for curing, and it's good for cooking with. But the leaf lard, the fat around the kidneys, is what you want for the best pastries.
And then there's something called lardo that you have a recipe for. And when I saw that, I'm thinking, okay, well, they just bring me a big block of lard to sit there and eat. But it's not that at all.
It's exactly. Not that at all.
Please but, tell us about lardo.
Mine is whipped lardo. So it's not the traditional Italian lardo, which is cured fat that is cured for a long time with herbs. And I don't have the proper conditions for doing that kind of curing. Whipped lardo, which I have had at restaurants in Vermont, is back fat that is ground up very finely and then whipped with herbs. And it becomes like a butter that you would spread on bread. It's delicious.
What does it taste like? Give me a little... Like, excite me, because the name has me intrigued, but I've never had it.
The herbs carry the most flavor, and then there's that unctuousness of fat. It's ineffable. I can't describe it.
And without giving the whole recipe, just one more that's in there that you think, if you go home tonight, Rick, this is the one you've got to make.
Oh, you're stumping me.
Oh, no kidding.
The Amish potato rolls that have lard in it, I recommend for your Thanksgiving feast.
Yeah.
I cover how to make gravy from the animal fats, and 'cause that really enhances the gravy to use that animal's fat. But one thing tonight, I don't know.
All right, I'll pick one. I'll figure it out when I get home. Might be the bacon jam. Andrea Chessman is from Ripton, and she's the author of more than 20 cookbooks, including her latest, The Fat Kitchen, How to Render, Cure, and Cook with Lard, Tallow, and Poultry Fat. Andrea will be speaking at the Lincoln Library tonight at 7, and will be at Kiss the Cook in Middlebury on Saturday. And you always bring treats, right?
I always bring treats.
We have a link to Andrea's website on today's show page at vpr.net. Andrea, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on cooking with animal fat and your recipes with us.
Thank you.